Welcome to this episode of the Wagging Tales podcast. On this episode, we are going to be looking at international travel. What we're aiming to do on this episode is to give listeners a fairly comprehensive guide on relocating with your pets. We're going to be focusing on international travel, as that's the one that we've been asked most about. However, we will be touching on certain aspects of things simply like moving house. So what we're going to be looking at here is preparation, travel tips, the legal requirements, how to help pets get prepared and adjusted to their new homes. Now, with us, we have Sherry from the Flying Fido. So I'd just like to welcome you onto the Wagging Tales podcast and ask you just to give us a little bit of an introduction, if that's okay.
Hi, so I'm Sherry from the Flying Fido. We have been doing this for about 8 years now. And we started out as rescuers, and here we are relocating animals because a lot of failure fosters like you guys needed to move somewhere. So here we are.
It really came from you just seeing the need for it, because people were obviously having to travel back to wherever they were from or overseas, and you saw a gap in the knowledge that people had to do that.
Yeah, that's right.
Also nice. That's a really nice way of getting into it. Actually sounds quite similar to why we do what we do as well, to be honest.
Yeah. Pretty
much. Okay, so what we're going to do is we'll start off pragmatically here. We're going to look at, first of all, the pre-relocation preparation. So, of course, Sherry, although we're going to be talking a little bit about this from the behaviour and the training side of things, you've got a lot of experience in this, so please just let us know if you've got any input or you're wanting to say anything, or even if you want to call us out on something you feel that could be done better, because I think that's also important. So, first of all, the big thing that everybody always talks about as soon as they know they're traveling overseas is crates. First and foremost, choosing the correct crate. Sherry, would you be able to shed some light on that for us?
Most importantly, number one, it's always safety. So our advice is always to get a good crate from a reputable manufacturer. And and the right size, of course, for the pets. That would be really important.
Can crates be too big? There's a lot of people that get crates, they want like, oh, I want a lot of space for my dog or cat. So
Can be too big. If you are having a French bulldog and you are getting a crate that is like the size of a castle, it's probably not that safe, because they get to, when they are being moved from the cargo area to the aircraft, they might tumble, you know, around inside the crate.
Like you were talking about good manufacturers, right? So if somebody skims out and then goes for a cheap crate, what's like the worst things that could happen?
So the quality of the plastic might not be good. It will snap easily upon pressure, and or some anxious dogs might chew on the plastic, and it gives way easily. And also the integrity of the grills in front to withstand banging from an anxious dog. So these are the things that you need to look out for.
And can you just tell us a little bit about what the requirements are from the airline standpoint? Because it seems sometimes that airlines have got different requirements for size or type of crate and things like that.
Yeah, so we adhere to IATA's regulation for pet crates. The pet must be able to stand up fully with a leeway of about 10 centimeters and will be able to turn around fully in the crate and lie down comfortably.
Okay. Yeah. That's a very good rule of thumb. So that's just from picking the crate for your dog. That's before we've done anything else. So even people can understand that when you're having to do any sort of international travel with your dog, or your cat for that matter, because a lot of what we're speaking about here works with any animal that you're relocating. But once you've picked the right crate for your dog, then you can start to think about what you need to do to prepare your dog. Now, introducing the crate is incredibly important, but a lot of the time we get calls from people saying, we're moving in 1 month's time, can you help us prepare our dogs? Which is just not enough time for the dog to be fully comfortable with the crate, with what's actually going to be happening with them. And it means that a lot of these dogs are going to be very anxious when they're traveling, which of course can lead to behavioral problems on the other end, which is something that a lot of people forget about. So, Jay, do you just want to run through a little bit about introducing the crate to our dogs?
Yeah. So the way that we tell our clients when they need to crate train a dog, not just for travel. Some people like to use the crate as like a safe space, a little home for the dog, where the dog is anxious or things like that, they can be treated back to crate.
Sorry, guys, there's somebody giving feedback there. Can we make sure that we've muted so we're not getting feedback?
I don't hear feedback. Oh,
unless it's me. No, it's not, I'm muted.
Okay. The things that we normally talk about for when we teach our clients how to do crate training is that when you get the crate, do not assemble it yet. You break it down into smaller parts so that your dog has more comfort in acclimatizing to, let's say, just the bottom half of it. Put lots of treats, put their bed there, put toys inside, get them very comfortable and excited. You cannot pick up your pet and just toss them in the crate and then close the gate, because that freaks them out a lot, and then your whole travel will be a mess. I've heard stories of people who do that, and then they have a different dog when they land, because the dog is just completely shut down, emotionally unavailable, gone. So you break up the crate, you have the bottom half, get them very comfortable with it. I don't recommend people putting on the top half until at least about a week or two later. And as long as you're consistent with it, I'm talking about like daily exercises, 10 minutes a day, 15 minutes a day to get your dog comfortable with it. Once you see your dog really comfortable with just going into the crate by themselves, because they see it as a very nice and relaxing place, you can put on the top. Even then, I still don't recommend putting the gate on yet, the fence, the gate. I've had some clients, I told them to just lay the gate flat on the ground, sprinkle a couple of treats, let them investigate and explore it themselves. And I've had some clients who waited till the last day, like the night before the flight, before putting the gate on. I don't recommend that, because some dogs really do get anxious about it. I feel like I've told them, put the gate in, but do not close it. Do not close it at all. Get your dog to go in and just have the gate there. You can slowly start to close it and then open it immediately so that your dog knows that they can come out. And then you start closing it for like a split second and open it. And then you can close it for 2 seconds and feed one treat through it. And then you just build up that duration of being in the crate. I never advise someone to put the dog in the crate, close the gate, and then just walk away for 5 minutes and come back, that kind of thing. Because that's a bit too much pressure for the dog, especially right at the start. And then there's also, here's where your expertise will help, Sherry. I've had some clients, I've asked them to, you know, hang like little water bowls on the gates and ask them to drink it. But I've also heard some of my clients say that all the water bowls are provided only by the airlines and stuff like that. So what's the actual thing here?
From my experience, when we purchase a crate, it usually comes with a bowl that is easily attachable on the grills. Well, if you don't have one, you can easily buy it on any pet shop. And I think the best thing you can train your dog on would be the water spout, where there's a water bottle.
That's the one?
Yes. Yeah. And once they know how to drink from that spout, you know, throughout the whole journey, the water will not spill, and they have constant water supply and fresh water. So that's really, really important.
What if the water runs out? Like, it's a long flight.
Well, if the water runs out, if it's a big dog, definitely you need to get a bigger bottle.
Yeah.
And if throughout the flight, maybe halfway through the flight, it runs out, it's fine, because you know at least the water has been inside, yeah, is inside the animal's body, rather than for the whole duration they get no water.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, and what about meals, like food?
It's advisable not to feed about 6 hours before. No, so the last timing you can feed the dog is about 6 hours before flight. So give them the chance to eat, and then they might have a bowel activity, and then let them go, and then they should be good for a while, for the whole duration of the flight until they land. So it's not advisable to feed during the flight. I mean, putting food inside the crate for them to eat during the flight.
Okay. Sorry, my video cut out again. Richard, do you want to take over and I try to figure this out?
Yeah, no problem. So a lot of airlines don't actually let you have food or even toys and things like that in the crate. Is that not right?
That's right.
Even with all the preparation we're talking about and knowing what's going to be happening, there's always some things that are going to be slightly different from airline to airline, I'd imagine.
Yes.
So just to add on what Jay was saying there, there's a few other little tips that we can give about introducing the crate. Normally what I suggest is where you place the crate in the house when you're introducing it is going to be a really social area, somewhere like the living room or the kitchen, where the dog can see and hear the family activities regularly, which will mean that the dog are more likely to spend time in the crate. I also suggest feeding all their meals in the crate. I also suggest doing things like boundary exercises with the crate as well, so that you're actually doing training with the crate rather than just trying to get the dog to be okay with the crate. All of these things come quite naturally when you're doing a progressive crate training. So that's certain things like leaving the dog alone, overnight training, things like that. We do have an article on crate training on the website for anybody that's interested in more detail on how to actually do that. And of course, if anybody's really struggling with the preparation, what I would suggest is reaching out to us so that we can help you and your specific dog. In the same way that if you're struggling with what we're about to start talking about, I would advise you reaching out to Sherry to make sure you're not getting caught out in any of the actual process here. Okay, so a few more things that I'm sure both of you will agree with here is we always talk about the crate, but there's a lot more to travel than the crate itself. You've got the actual journey. So you've got airport noise. You've got the noises of being shifted from the airport to the outside the aircraft, to going inside the aircraft, traveling in the aircraft. It's quite a lot to deal with. What I'll do just now is I will find, here we go, just bear with me. This is a good video that's on YouTube, and it shows us the journey of a dog shows you the full journey of a dog from when he goes into the crate and on the aircraft and all of that good stuff. So it lets you appreciate exactly what the dogs go through. Now, this means that we should be doing things like counter conditioning of movement of the crate while the dog's inside it, not just saying, oh, the dog's crate trained, now we're good. Well, is a dog crate trained to the point where he can sleep in it in the house, or can he be moved? Have you worked on desensitization of sounds, acclimatization to temperature change? Have you worked on confidence building exercises regarding the crate? All of these things need to be looked at as well. It's not just a case of letting the dog be okay with the crate. There's a little bit more to it when you're expecting your dog to actually travel on an airplane. So that's even, again, just to do with the crate and the travel. But also, before I move on, Sherry, do you have anything else to add to that?
Like you said, there are actually more than just crate training alone. For example, the movement of the crates, it's really important that the animals don't get startled inside the claustrophobic crate. So it's really important to make them desensitized, you know, the movement, the sounds, the really loud aircraft sounds and the banging of cargo. Yeah. And also temperature changes. So flight planning is really important, where you plan your flight such that it lands at a similar temperature, maybe at night. And so the aircraft temperature and the land ground temperature would be similar.
Yeah. That's a really good point, actually, to sort of plan it so that you're not putting the dog through that shock. Mm. And as we always say, it's setting the dog up for success.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's also so, quarantine to plan.
That's right.
Yeah, we'll touch on quarantine a little bit later. that's a big one. That's a big one. Okay, so even just for moving house, this is the same sort of thing. But when you're moving internationally, you've got familiarization of moving supplies. So let's just say if you are moving internationally and your dog ends up in this new apartment or new house, there's going to be boxes everywhere. Is your dog used to be having boxes everywhere? Have those moving supplies around your old home so that your dog's not completely shocked when they move. Have you set a routine which can be maintained at both ends? So for example, if your normal routine is taking your dog to a busy cafe, but you're moving internationally to the countryside, well, you might want to alter the routine so the dog's used to a routine which is a little bit quieter. So when you move to the area that's quieter, it's not such a shock to the dog's routine. So thinking about all of that stuff is very important as well. And then the simple things that most people do think about is things like, does your dog have a safe space in a new house? What's going to be the familiar objects that you're going to be shipping across? So is it a bed? Is it the crate itself? Do you have blankets or old t-shirts that your dog is used to? These are the kind of things that you need to make sure you are bringing to the new home. So all of that is very, very important, as well as the obvious one of updating the identification information for your dog, because that's something that can be overlooked. So, Sherry, if you've got anything more to add on that, that's great. But I'm also interested in quarantine. If you can tell us about quarantine, which main countries you have to do the quarantine in and what to expect?
Well, if it's out of Singapore, a lot of countries for our pets entering, they do not have to serve quarantine. But we do have Australia is one that we have many, many clients moving into, and we have to serve a 10-day quarantine there. And we also, for New Zealand as well, that would be 10 days quarantine. For moving into the UK, no quarantine. Yeah. So for pets moving into Singapore, it depends on the category of the countries coming in. We have from 10 days to 30 days and also home quarantine on case-by-case basis.
Okay. That's good. Let's look at people coming into Singapore. What can people expect the quarantine to be like? What can they do to make it easier for themselves and their dogs?
So in Singapore, the quarantine is actually really pleasant, and the staff there really, really, really loves animals. So the feedback I get from a lot of owners are that it has been a pleasant stay, even though if it's even 30-day stay, the pets are bright and happy and they go home very well. So to prepare the pets for quarantine, I guess it would be a lot of separation on the, you know, to acclimatize them to long periods of separation. But the good thing is we can visit our pets every day from 3 to 5 p.m., but they're closed on Sundays and public holidays. So you do get to see your pets in quarantine. Yeah.
Can you not see them in other countries in quarantine?
It depends on which countries. For Australia and New Zealand, no. You're not allowed to visit your pet. Yeah. Okay.
And what category is Singapore considered?
Into which country?
In general, like let's say if if Australia is like what, Cat 1, Cat A, is it? And then Singapore is Cat B?
Oh, so to come in, so exporting and importing, it would have different categories. So for example, if Singapore dogs going into Australia, we are a Category 2. But for Australia dogs coming into Singapore, they are our Category A.
Oh, wow, that's...
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, airlines and everyone, for confusing everything. Just stick to numbers or alphabets. Why do you have to mix everything?
Yeah. So it really depends on whether you are outgoing or incoming and what kind of category you are in that country.
And I suppose that's what makes it important to either know exactly what you're doing or make sure you're finding an agency like yourself that can guide them properly.
That's right.
There is so many differences.
Yeah.
So what I would say about quarantine preparation would be, make sure that you've got your dog evaluated for confidence and independence. Make sure you've done things like the same sort of aspects that you would do when you're trying to get your dog to be ready for going to the vet. Can they be handled by people? Are they confident around strangers? Are they contented settling down? Have you done your sort of exercises that's required to help your dog gain some independence and confidence? And if your dog has separation anxiety, for everything that is holy, make sure you have done plenty of preparation. So if you know that you're potentially moving overseas and your dog's got separation anxiety, you should be working on that 6 months plus in advance, so that your dog doesn't come out a nervous wreck. So these are the sort of things that we really need to be aware of, because quarantine can be pleasant for some dogs in some countries, but others not so much. So we need to be aware of that when we're planning anything and make sure that we're putting in that work and getting the advice that's required so that we don't end up getting a nasty shock. Yeah. Okay, so that's all the preparation. We've not even got to the stage where we're traveling yet. So now let's look at the legal and health considerations for international pet relocation. So roughly, what sort of the necessary vaccinations are needed? What can we expect is required of our dogs and our vets before we move them overseas or bring them Singapore or anywhere else?
So the general vaccinations, like your core vaccinations, that's almost always required. And for most countries, the rabies vaccination, even though Singapore is rabies free. So it's required on the other end. And also, especially for snub-nosed dogs, flat-faced, you have to get the vet's recommendation to see whether they are suitable to fly, because a lot of them are not.
Mm-hmm.
They have breathing problems. Yeah.
What other options do people have if that's the case? If the dog can't fly, is there any way of doing road trips or by sea or anything like that if the country's not too far?
By sea, probably not. By road, maybe possible. But then again, it depends on the destination. For example, if you're going from Singapore to Malaysia, that's possible. But let's say if you're going from Singapore to Thailand, you have to pass through Malaysia, which also means that you have regulations of Malaysia to adhere to before you go on to Thailand.
That's a very good point, because I know that one of my friends' mum fostered a dog from Turkey, and they basically drove the dog from Turkey through Europe into Scotland.
Yes.
But that was before Brexit, so you could just drive through the EU. Not sure how that would work now.
So pretty driving difficult, is, I would say. Driving is possible, but it's just very complicated.
It is, right.
Okay.
And sea travel's not an option, unless, of course, you get a cruise ship, I guess.
So I have checked out some cruises before, and from what I gather, it would be the pets are not allowed out of the crate. So it would be a terrible 1 to 2 weeks inside the crate.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether regulations have changed since. That was a few years back. But it could potentially be really stressful for the animal.
definitely.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Because I always thought that if they did allow pets to be on a cruise and you're able to walk around the boat, that would actually be an all right option. But if the pet's not allowed out of the crate,
yeah,
that's horrible.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, for example, if you were to drive your dog from Singapore to Malaysia, it's considered a Singapore dog importing into Malaysia, right?
That's correct. So
if that same dog on that same trip would drive from Malaysia to Thailand, is it considered a Malaysia dog or is it still considered a Singapore dog?
So it would be considered a Malaysia dog unless you have a transit permit.
Ah, okay, okay. Yeah. Okay, right.
Well, there's certainly a lot to consider when you're trying to navigate.
Yeah, goddamn.
So that's the kind of things we need to look at there. We looked at quarantine. What kind of paperwork are people expected to look for?
What kind of paperwork?
Like ownership or like dog registrations, licensing, things like that.
Yeah, so dog registration. Definitely, from Singapore, out of Singapore, we definitely need the dog license. And then we would require basically the vet requirements to be met. And then at the end of it, we have another final check to make sure that the dog is fit and healthy for travel. And then AVS would endorse everything, every single document, and then you are ready to go.
So do you find it easier when you're working with clients that are in Singapore moving overseas rather than clients that are coming into Singapore from overseas?
So what happened is we are in an association called IPATA, International Pets Travel Association. We work with agents all around the world. So if I have a client in Australia that engaged an Australian agent, they would call me and say, oh, Sherry, I have a dog coming to Singapore. You would collect the dog from your end. And when we work together on both ends.
Okay, that's good. So that's actually quite good to look at as well then. Now let's take a look at more of the travel tips. Or is this something that you do for, do you do all for the clients, or do the clients need to choose their own airlines? Do they have to do a lot of the actual flight preparation, like feeding, exercising right before the flight? Or is that something you guys do, or do the airport staff do it? And how do you manage layovers for long flights as well?
Wow, so there's actually a lot to this. How much we are to manage depends on how much the clients want us to manage for them. We can do everything from start to finish, and they don't need to do anything at all other than to acclimatize the pet for travel, to train the dogs for traveling. So there are different aspects of traveling. There are checked baggage, in-cabin checked baggage. We also have air cargo. So for all the checked baggage options, the client would have to handle the air tickets on their own. But for the air cargo option, manifested cargo, that we will have to book for them. And that would typically be for pets that are not traveling together with their owners.
Right.
Yeah.
So airlines are more pet friendly than others?
You mean specific airlines?
Yeah.
There are a few airlines that we prefer to use. More so than others, also because they have more experience with pet traveling. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're allowed to name names.
So we really, really like Lufthansa. And we do KLM as well. Swiss Airline, Singapore Airlines. Singapore Airlines is really strict, but they are really good with pets. Yep. So those are the major ones that we like to use.
That's nice to know, yeah.
So you don't have to name airlines? Oh, sorry. Sorry, Rachel. You don't have to name airlines, but then have there been bad experiences? Because, you know, social media, I think a year ago, I saw this video of this guy who landed in his destination airport. And then when he asked where's his dogs, they couldn't give him a reply. I think I would kill somebody if that happened to me.
I would lose my mind. I don't know what I would do.
Yeah.
I might just explode.
It's really strange. For a pet relocator, to me, that's really strange because he might be asking the wrong person.
Yeah, I mean, the guy at the counter obviously didn't know.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine what was going through his mind. But I mean, in like 2 hours, an hour and a half, 2 hours later, they found where the dogs were and then they reunited him. So that was fine. But like, that must have been a hell of a 2 hours.
Yeah, I cannot imagine.
Yeah.
Man, I've only been away from my dogs for a week and I'm already losing my mind with it. And that's with my mum and my sister's dog that I can use as stand-ins. Okay, so with that, which airlines, if any now, because I'm not sure, I know that a few years ago there were some airlines that allowed dogs in the cabin because we had a great situation where we were basically training the dog up to be able to be in the cabin. Beautiful Singapore special, and he flew to the US with Singapore Airlines in economy class just at their feet. And it was great. It really was amazing. But is that still possible? Is there certain airlines that can do it? What are the requirements? What are the restrictions? Just all about that. How do we do that? Would I be able to have my three big Singapore specials in the cabin with me?
The short answer is, unfortunately, no. For a short period of time, emotional support dogs were a big thing. So there were too many on board. So airlines now are a lot stricter on emotional support dogs, and some airlines do not allow emotional support dogs. That said, it's different for service dogs. So service dogs are always allowed on board.
Okay.
Yeah. And those airlines that allow, well, we still have airlines that allow animals in cabin, but I would say just a handful.
Okay.
And also,
so
you
I
have
size I have crazy anxiety to get all three.
Well, you can try. You might be able to get through, maybe. I don't know.
But you think that's terrible. There's size restrictions or like weight restrictions, yes. Something like that. What's
the restriction? There's weight restrictions of 7 kilograms, including the carrier. So, which also means your pet should be about 5 kilograms.
So, 7 kilograms, including the carrier.
That's right.
Wow. But that's for emotional support, not for service dogs.
No. So, that's for any dog that the airline could accept as in cabin. Yeah.
Even service dogs.
So, service dog has no size restrictions.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alexis there in the comments saying, so basically just a kitten.
Yes, kind of, yeah. A barking kitten.
So barking, what about emotional support dogs, and do they have a size restriction?
No, they don't.
Okay, so both service and emotional.
Support dogs have a size restriction, service dogs don't.
No, both don't.
Both don't.
In-cabin dogs, like just a pet, has a size restriction.
That's right. So emotional support dogs and service dogs. Service dogs have certifications. Emotional support dogs has doctor's recommendations. And for pets, a general pet, a little dog that you are going to bring as your pet on an excess baggage in cabin, that would have a size restriction, a weight restriction.
Okay. And the different countries allow things that others don't, or is it more the airline that dictates?
Actually, both. And it changes all the time. So we always have to update ourselves with the regulations of the airline and also the country's regulation.
Okay. So you said that emotional support dogs are less common now. What airlines allow emotional support dogs?
Oh, that I'm not quite sure. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it'd be more case-by-case basis, I'd imagine, then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Righty-ho. Okay, so let me move on to the next part of finding a suitable agent. So you said that you're part of part of a group. So obviously there's different travel agencies that you guys trust each other with. Can you
Yes.
tell us a little bit more about that and what people need to look out for when they're choosing the correct people?
So this IPATA is an association. So we go through certifications and we have a yearly conference. All the shippers from around the world gather together. We talk about the problems that we face and how we can make the industry better. The airlines also come together with us to improve the pet travel sector in the business.
It's kind of like the IABC for us. What about private jets?
Oh,
Is that something you guys do as well?
yes, I just
Oh,
had
okay.
one yesterday.
Oh, wow. And is it like just one animal or is it like a group with a few animals?
There were three adults and two pets. So it's a golden retriever with a cavadoodle. So
Okay.
they were going to Sri Lanka on a private jet. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the good
Very
thing
nice.
about it, I'm not quite sure if I'm allowed to say that. They technically don't have to be in a crate the whole time. To me, that's a plus.
Okay.
So they
What do you mean by technically? It's a private jet. They can do whatever they want. Is it that
yeah,
sort of
so
thing?
they were mostly on their owner's laps, I would say.
Okay. Even a golden retriever. Yeah, all right.
Yes, yes,
That's
yes. I'll post that up on
perfect.
my Instagram, that picture with him with the golden retriever on his lap.
Wow, that's nice. Because I think I've seen on Facebook a Singapore group about people who need to travel or like need to relocate, and then they kind of like get how many people can fit in a private jet, an
Well, it
average one.
depends on the aircraft itself. So there
Of
are, I think,
course.
10 seats or 20 seats, depend on which aircraft that you book.
Right. So if it's 10 seats, is that like 5 people and 5 dogs allowed, or is it like 10 people and 10 dogs allowed?
So on my flight yesterday, they needed to take two seats out to accommodate the crates.
Okay. Because
Yeah,
there's two
so
dogs, so.
that's right. Yeah. So it really
Okay.
depends on the size of the pets and also the size of the crates and how much they can accommodate. Yeah.
Okay. And of course, how much was that? A trip to Sri
Ooh.
Lanka is just 3 hours, 2 hours?
Yeah, about 4 hour flight.
Okay.
It's five figures that I can
Of
say.
course.
I don't know for sure, but it's not cheap.
Upper five or lower five?
Lower five, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's 4 hours. So let's say if it's 20 grand, you want to fly to the States. If you want to fly 12 hours, that'll be four
Ooh.
times three, 60 grand, 70 grand. I'm just
Maybe.
guessing. But yeah. But okay, so on private jet, when they land in Sri Lanka, is it still the same? The rules, like the quarantine and stuff like that, everything's still the same.
That's right. That's
Okay,
right.
okay, okay. So there's no like special exemption just because they
No.
paid more.
No. They get the
Yeah, of course. I mean, they pay
VIP
for it,
lounge, though. Yeah.
right? Okay, so we talked about choosing airlines, experiences with the airlines, talked about the agents. So the one of the things that we like to discuss a lot about is because a lot of people buy the crate just for the travel, and then after that they toss the crate away. They feel like oh, or they give away the crate and stuff like that. But we like to reuse things. Maybe it's because I'm a cheapskate. I'm not sure. But yeah, when you crate train your dog and get them really comfortable in the crate, you bring it to your new home, your dog can get into feeling that it's their new home a lot quicker because the crate is already something that they're so accustomed to, they're so comfortable with. So I always tell a lot of my clients, don't throw the crate away. Because when you get to your new home, you set up the crate there. And oh, from your experience, do the owners usually reach the house first, or let's say there's no quarantine involved, or the dog reaches there first, or the animal?
Definitely the owners first, because we have to do inspections once we land.
Okay, okay.
Those for coming into Singapore. So we need to do cargo clearances. There are inspections involved, paperwork to be checked, and then to make sure the dog that is coming is the correct dog, the correct pet.
course.
Yeah.
You don't get the wrong dog.
Oh, we do. We have seen not our clients, but we have seen a wrong dog being sent in. So that could potentially be a big problem. Yeah.
Of course. Oh, that sounds terrible.
Yes.
Blue. Come here.
Oh, hi.
Yeah. Okay. So this is Blue. She wants to say hi.
Hi.
So yeah, she and Ori, they will go with me wherever I go.
Right, that's nice.
Yeah. Good girl. Okay, you're getting really heavy. Okay, so let's see. The next thing is we talked about the space.
Mm.
Give me one moment. So health-wise and behavior-wise, do you feel like dogs accustom quite quickly to their new homes? Because a lot of the time, my clients say that their dog acclimatizes really well because wherever they move to is usually better weather, I guess, compared to Singapore, right? But I like to chalk it up to them having the bond, them having built the bond with their pets, their dogs, so that in a new place, they acclimatize quite quickly. And after that, those that fly to, especially the US, they go everywhere together after that because it's friendly and stuff like that. One really cool thing is that I had a client who moved to the US and then they moved into an RV. And they just travel the whole of the US nonstop. They just keep going from state to state and then they just park at places and then they just get a lot of things like that.
That's so nice.
Yeah, and of course in Singapore you can't do that because where are you gonna go from one MRT to the other, right?
I believe it has a lot to do with the bond that the owners have with their pets, and that helps the animal to acclimatize to the new space more quickly. I haven't had anyone tell me, their pets are depressed for 2 months, unless maybe they left another pet behind. That could be the reason for the pet's depression. Yeah, but generally, most pets bounce back within a week or so, even for cats.
Oh, okay. Any health concerns, like after travel?
Not quite, because we really check the animal before traveling to make sure that they are fit and healthy for travel.
So if they have like a cough or stuff like that, they are not allowed to travel.
Yes, that's right. So if it's visible signs of illnesses, so like coughing or they are lethargic, they are just not bright, usually they will get rejected from the airline.
What about like skin issues? Like, sometimes in Singapore it's seasonal, right? Some dogs shed a lot, get very itchy. If they are traveling during that period whereby, I don't know, their body flares up and has a lot of patches, so are they still allowed to travel?
They are. Typically for dogs with severe cases of skin allergies, they would usually already have a prescription or a doctor's letter to say that, this is an ongoing problem, they are on medication. As long as it's not contagious, then it should be fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. That's quite a lot of information. And I think you can tell that I had a lot of personal questions as well.
Please. Happy to help.
Yeah. Because it's always a question mark. Like when clients ask me about some things, I can't really give them a definitive answer, right? Because I'm not in this industry. So it's good to know that I'm basically asking questions for my clients and for myself as well. Yeah. But it's good. We definitely, if we have clients who are willing to who need to travel, we'll just drop them your contact.
Thank you.
One thing we do with a lot of people that we work with is that we have a consultation report from the first time we meet that dog, and like ongoing reports about how the dog has progressed and stuff like that. So let's say we have a border or a daycare, right? And then we introduce our client to the daycare. What we'll do is we'll send the daycare that report. So do you think it would help you if like one of our clients approach you and then we just send you that same report? Or is it not really necessary? It's a behavioral report. And it has some medical background, but then you would still go to the vet regardless. Because we are not vets.
It will definitely help somewhat. Then we can better advise them to plan for their trip. Like, you know, if you have an anxious dog and you know they have separation anxiety, so we would really advise them to take, maybe delay their flight if they are looking to travel soon, you know, to better plan their trips for them. And also upon landing, how we can plan for the, maybe to land when the airport's not too crowded, lesser noise, lesser people handling them, you know.
Okay. Oh yeah, I forgot to ask this. When pets have layovers, let's say like it's, I don't know, a short one, like 2 or 3 hours layover, are they allowed out of the crate to, like, you know, relieve themselves and things like that, and then continue?
They're not. So it depends on what kind of layover that is. Some layovers, they do not leave the aircraft at all, so they do not get to come out to relieve themselves. Long layovers, like maybe 10 to 18 hours, they would be allowed out.
Okay.
So it's important to choose the airline that you use, because whether they have an animal facility in that transiting airport or not is really crucial for a long layover.
I thought so there are still airports out there that don't have these facilities.
That's right.
Oh, okay. I honestly thought like all airports had it already.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, that's a bit sad, but yeah.
So the airlines that we choose also have, the airlines that I named earlier, they have facilities that are really good. And for long layovers, the pets get to, you know, relax, stretch themselves out.
Okay. So if, let's say I were to go to the States and I do not require any quarantine, right? I take the same flight with my dogs. Can I wait at the airport for my dogs to be released and then I just bring them myself? Or
you can potentially, if you are going on excess baggage, yes.
Excess baggage, that's like bringing up on, or even checking.
Excess bag, yes. So for a big dog, it's still in cargo, but you check the dog in as per normal when you check into the passenger terminal. And when you arrive at the airport in the US, the pet is probably, the crate is probably there already waiting for you at the like
baggage area.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So for manifested cargo, we typically are in a different part of the airport. So the agents will then come in to do clearance on the other side.
So if that's the case, then you can't go and pick up your dog.
That's right.
Okay. So it's basically because you guys handle everything.
Yeah.
But you guys handle like doorstep to doorstep.
That's right.
Transportation,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's pretty cool. But so from your experience, do you think people want to leave it to you more, or do they want to like have as much hands-on as possible?
I would always advise owners to leave it to us, because it's pretty stressful to be looking at the process on top of handling your own relocation.
Right.
Yeah. So I would tell them, since you have engaged me, leave your stress to me with anything to do with a pet.
Okay.
We prefer to do that for the clients.
Okay. So yeah, it's hassle-free, I guess.
Yes.
Well, because flying is stressful, even if you're just flying it for yourself. There's a lot of things to consider.
Especially a relocation where you basically pack up your life and move somewhere foreign, probably.
Yeah, you have to prepare up a lot of things, packing and...
Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to that, but... But we need space. So Noble Canine, we want to set up like a rehabilitation center for dogs. Yeah, and we can't do that in Singapore because it costs too much. Like, just get the space for it alone is going to kill us. I could probably get a private jet instead for the cost to do that. Yeah, so that's why we want to look at places whereby, like Fraser is looking at Scotland, I'm looking at the US. I'm now swinging more towards the US because you just told me that Australia has that 10-day quarantine. Yeah.
But also, you need to look at coming back. If you decide... one day you want to move back to Singapore, the pets from the US would have quarantine and the pets from Australia has no quarantine.
Right. But how long is the quarantine from the US to Singapore?
So there are two choices, the 10 day or the 30 days. So the 10 days, you have to give additional vaccinations. Mm. Whereas the 30 days, you know, you just have one rabies shot and you come in.
Oh, but like you said, to me, like quarantine in Singapore is really good. I get to visit
yeah.
them.
Well, but yes.
That's a very big thing. Where is the quarantine center, if you don't mind?
Now, right now, it's at Sungai Tengah.
Oh, the Animal Lodge?
No. So it's called AQC, Animal Quarantine Center. It's run by NParks ABS.
Oh, okay, okay. Mm. Okay, okay. So it's just further down from, but after SPCA and...
Yes, it's pretty near SPCA.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Right, right. Okay. do you have any like last minute things to add, or now's the time to plug yourself with the Flying Fido?
Oh, well, actually more like for listeners that are tuning in, if you know that you're going to move soon, plan really far ahead. And to us, the most important thing would be crate training, definitely. So we always tell owners, as long as you get your crate training done right, you know, your 90% of your problems are almost gone.
All right. Thank you very much, Sherry, for
sharing
with us all of this. It was a knowledgeable experience for me as well. I learned quite a few things. Yeah. And all right, that's the end of our podcast episode. Thank you for listening in, whether you're listening live or you're listening afterwards. Do help us share, like, and of course, we will be posting the Flying Fidos, how to contact them in the show notes that you can see at the end of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.